Very excited to be speaking with master musician, powerhouse drummer, composer, arranger, a man of many musical talents, Mark McLean. Greetings, Mark.
Greetings to yourself. Thank you. It's a pleasure to be speaking with you as well.
Thank you for speaking with us. Your new CD, Feel All Right, just expertly navigates genre crossroads, and it just proves, all labels aside, good music is simply good music. It's got soul, pop rock, blues funk, cool jazz, and more. This CD is definitely a winner, and I mean that. I've been listening a lot. Now, first off, I want to start with the songs, because each one is solid. Each one's a standalone. Do you have any particular favorites among them?
You know, every song is kind of close to me, but the lead track, Shining Star Be Mine, I've been waiting to record that for a while. That's one of the older songs
Yes.
on the record. Like, you know, that's one of the first ones I penned. And I remember being really excited about that. So it seemed very rewarding to finally have it recorded.
It's a wonderful song to be perfect at the urban pop or adult contemporary radio. It's definitely a single.
Thank you. I think so too. Very happy about that. And that's one. And Angel on Your Pillow, that's another one that was very.
That's
exciting.
Another great. Is that that's also the same guy? Is it Wade?
Wade O'Brown.
Yes, Wade O'Brown.
Well, yeah, he had a lot to do with it, of course, you know, bringing the words off the page and just bringing that song to life. It just it was everything I wanted it to be.
It's fantastic. I mean, just from where I live, from my particular pocket, I definitely, Where's the Door jumped out at me. And, of course, January Rain, because I'm a huge Andy Bay fan.
Oh, well, thank you very much. And,
Feel All Right, the title tune.
Oh, yeah, Andy does once Andy Bay sings a song, it's never the same.
No, he's just so wonderful and truthful. Have you worked with him much in the past?
Yes, actually, my big break when I first moved to New York was in 2000 with Andy Bay.
Wow.
And Andy took me, my first big gig was at the Berlin Jazz Festival with Andy Bay's trio.
Oh, fantastic. Whoa.
I worked with Andy for 4 years. After that, did one of his records, American Song, which was nominated for a Grammy. Didn't win, but he got nominated. So I have a very nice history with Mr. Bay.
That's fantastic. And it's also way past time for Andy Bay to have a Grammy. I just added that.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I would love it for it to be part of this project or his own project. But yeah, he definitely is one of the most underrated singers on the planet. I know within the musical community, everyone knows
him. Everyone knows him, yes.
But we need to, let's find a way. But yeah, it was great. January Rain is the oldest song.
Wow.
That's the first song that I've written. You know, that was actually written in, I believe, in 2006.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so it's an old one. But it hasn't seen the light of day until this year, so.
That's excellent. Let me ask you now, as a songwriter, would you share some of your creative process? I mean, I know piano was your first instrument. So does the music come first? Does the lyrics come first? Or are these songs born of personal experiences?
Yeah, well, they're all different, you know, and the thing that's interesting about where I am right now, like the songs are, I've only been writing songs the last, let's say, six, seven years, so it's always different. Normally for me, since piano is my first instrument, melody always comes first for me. So I'll hear something, I'll be singing a cool melody, and then maybe I'll put a lyrical line to it.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay, that's kind of cool. Let me create something around this thing that might be a hook or this is a great opening line for a song. Let me try to find a couple other things and connect the dots. So that's one approach. Where's the Door? I wanted to write a song about a one-night stand of a musician. So that was, I kind of set out I sort of set out to do that. And I think the first thing that came to me was the actual groove that this motif that the piano plays. And from there, I did, the bass and drums, and then I wrote the melody on top of it.
I just, as I said, I just love that cut. You know, that just jumped out to me. And the whole production of it, it just the whole, I think there's some crackling vinyl in the beginning of it, if I'm not mistaken, the whole vibe of it.
I like the way it happened. That was actually done all in one room, the rhythm section, the drums, basically how we recorded it, all in one room with about two microphones. And we went for a really an older sound.
I love that. Besides just collecting these songs and just sharing quality music, is there an overall concept for the album?
Well, I think what we set out to do, when I say we, I was talking about myself and the producer, mm-hmm. Steve Biggins, we went to high school together, and he knows that I have a lot of influences. And when I was first writing this material and sharing this material with him, I was sort of saying, I'm not sure if this really belongs on the same record. Belongs on the same record.
Yeah.
So, and we just kind of wanted to come up with a very raw approach to recording the music.
Yeah.
And I think we really achieved that. Like, I think we proved that it's possible for all this music to live in one place on the same record.
Yeah, and very well. Live very comfortably together. I also have to say it's great that you have, as the producer, someone that you have a history with, that you've known since high school. It just enriches the whole process, and they can be on the same page as you are, create, or turn the page and say, hey, let's go here, and maybe you'd be inclined to follow.
It's great to have someone that you've known that long, and you can also fight with them, too.
That's good, yes.
Because you know each other so well, you're like, you're an idiot. That didn't happen.
Well, I know what you mean, though. Yeah, you can have disagreements and just have it all still be about the work.
Yes, exactly. So that was good. And now that looking at the record, it's kind of a playlist of all my favorite influences. If I had to put on like my iPod, like you'd hear some jazz stuff, you'd hear some soul stuff, you'd hear some R and B, folky kind of thing. So yeah. It's kind of like,
I like that. I like that. Now, you have so many influences. What artists have been primary inspirations for you, for your music?
Wow. I'd say that I really love Stevie Wonder.
Yes.
Just the way he can take a very simple melody and make it sound so beautiful and move the harmony around that melody.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that always fascinates me with him. I will say Andy Bay was an influence because he was always encouraging me to write music and do more and play more piano, so that he's one. I got a chance to work with Jimmy Webb, who's a great,
oh my god, yes. The yeah. Songwriter, great songwriter, yes.
Yeah, I worked with him and Glenn Campbell for a week at Feinstein.
That's right, I read you worked with Glenn Campbell. I'm like, wow, this guy's everywhere. <That's great.
laughs> Yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't really, I knew a lot of Jimmy Webb's songs, but I didn't really, it's just one of those gigs that came out of nowhere, which is great. But just learning and seeing his catalog of songs was just kind of like, wow.
Fantastic.
And I don't think, I can't say I took anything directly from him, but I was just inspired.
Inspired by him.
Everyone's writing this guy's songs.
Yeah. Going back in your life as far as you can remember, what song or performance is the first that you recall hearing that deeply moved you or affected you in some positive way?
First thing that really excited me for the piano, when I first started taking piano, I think I saw a little girl playing classical piano on television, and I asked my parents for lessons, and that's how that started. But I remember the first time I heard Conga by the Miami Sound Machine.
Ah!
Yeah, I used to love that song.
It still sounds good. That's a fun, exciting, up song.
Yeah, and when the piano goes into the piano section and then goes into the Montunos. So I remember really, really loving that. And I used to have this Fisher-Price record player, and I had this single was Elvis Presley's Jailhouse Rock.
Oh my God.
I looking back on it, I'm sure I drove my parents nuts. I would just play this thing over and over and over again.
Oh, crazy. God. That's hysterical, but you know, that's variety.
Right, yeah, absolutely.
Now, who are some of your current favorite artists?
Oh, obviously Stevie's still up there, but yeah, I really like Bruno Mars.
Yeah, you know, he can perform.
I love what he's doing. Like, just the showmanship,
yes.
The writing, like, it's great. It's great. So he's definitely a favorite. Those are two things at the forefront for me, for sure.
Okay. If you had to pick a handful of record essentials, or desert island discs, as they used to say, what LPs or CDs would be among the finalists? Just a handful of records that you find absolutely essential to your well-being.
Wow. Miles Davis, Kind of Blue.
Yes.
I
was going on record as saying that's essential to everyone's handful of Desert Island Discs, whether they know it or not. They should have my yes.
No, exactly. And, you know, honestly, Songs in the Key of Life, I think that's just...
Oh, absolutely.
I wore Off the Wall, Michael Jackson.
Oh, yeah. Now, I think you came on the New York jazz scene from Canada, correct?
Yes, I was born and raised.
Okay, late 1999, you came here?
Yeah, 1999, yeah. I would say technically it's 2000.
Okay, like 2000. All right, I know you already had a lot of quality training and performance experience, even there in Canada. In fact, I heard you played with Oscar Peterson.
Yes, that was a big gig.
That is major. How did that come about? Do you remember how that came about?
Oh, yeah, I can tell you exactly how that came about. On the faculty at University of Toronto was a bass player named David Young.
Mm-hmm.
He'd been working with Oscar for decades. And David saw me play at one of the student recitals and got my number, and I did a couple gigs with David's quintet. And then he said, hey, there's a gig coming up on, I think it was April 21st. That I want you to do, I'm going to put your name in for it. And I said, sure. And he said, yeah, it's with Oscar. That's the first time I played Oscar Peterson. I went to his house and rehearsed.
Ooh.
And it was just a surreal experience because that at the time, that's all I was listening to, which involved Herb Ellis on guitar.
Yeah.
So that was unbelievable.
Whew.
I still don't believe it.
Man. Drummer-wise, who were your major influences in terms of other drummers? Who inspired you?
Oh, wow. Well, in the beginning, one of the first drummers I heard was Elvin Jones.
Yes!
Elvin Jones on, the first record I heard was John Coltrane, Coltrane Plays the Blues.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I'm smiling. I'm smiling, even as you mention it.
that record is unbelievable. And then, shortly after that, I heard Tony Williams.
Wonderful.
Playing with the Miles Davis 60s band, and I heard the record they did in 64 at Carnegie Hall,
mm-hmm.
My Funny Valentine, Born More.
Yes.
I never knew you could play the ride cymbal that fast when I was listening to Tony Williams. Like, he's 17 too. And I'm like, oh,
wow.
Man.
I didn't realize he was 17 then.
He was 17 on that recording.
Ooh.
Yeah, unbelievable. So, maybe 18.
Still what?
Yeah. So, there's him, and, then they got into Max Roach.
Yeah.
And, of course, Philly Joe Jones.
Yes.
Billy Joe Jones, he's just in a league of his own. Hearing him play with Bill Evans or Johnny Griffin or Griffith. And then for the modern guys, Brian Blade is...
This is excellent. Let me ask you, does the jazz scene in Canada differ much from the New York jazz scene?
Yeah, it's a different feeling.
Mm-hmm.
For Okay. And maybe the piano player is a different type of, I think it's more of a, seems like more of a way of life down here, you know?
Okay.
I could feel the connection to, when I get down here, I hear a connection to funk and R&B and soul and everything.
Yeah,
I'm definitely pulled more towards the way players play down in New York versus Toronto.
Okay.
Having said that, I have tremendous respect.
Respect for what's going
on. The Canadian musicians, because they are unbelievable, and I wouldn't, Oscar Peterson being at the top of the list.
Yes, Matt. Now, I think I read that you studied with Kenny Washington as well.
Yes, I was my first move here. I grant by the Canada Council for the Arts to study with Kenny Washington. So I studied with him for a little bit, and then he got very busy doing radio, satellite radio.
Ah, okay.
So from Kenny, I studied with Billy Gilson.
Yes.
The great drummer. He's been playing with Chris Bode the past 9 years.
So you've had a number of jazz mentors or just people to expand your horizons creatively.
Absolutely. Oh yeah, it's been so many.
Are you presently mentoring any jazz artists yourself? Or any artist yourself?
No, I'm not actually. I get called for I did some online lessons for this company called Drumeo, so I get a lot of email from people asking me questions about stuff and asking if I'm going to put like a book out or publish the music from my records. So I can see that making an appearance in my life at some point.
Yeah, I actually I think that's a good idea. I think you should, as well as putting out publishing the music. I can easily see a book, and I can easily see that helping people, especially because of the many, many genres that you embrace. In a way, the Feel All Right CD is like a book. You know, it's like a guideway to see, as if you're saying, see, this can work. You can do these. All of these things do fit comfortably under the same roof, you know, and complement one another.
Exactly. There is a way to be free from categorization. You know, you don't want to be.
And don't fence you in. Yeah. Matt, so you already mentioned Glenn Campbell. I definitely made note that you work with such a wide variety of artists: Quincy Jones, Andrea Bocelli, Gladys Knight, the Backstreet Boys. I was going to ask you, is this creative diversity a conscious choice? I just think it's an organic choice to you. Correct? It's just who you are.
I think so. Yeah, that's what's been happening. So you just kind of go on with it. Enjoying it as it happens.
Excellent. Now, is there anybody that you love to work with that you haven't yet?
Sting. That would be
great. Yeah.
Stevie Wonder. That's still up on the list for sure.
Oh, yeah.
I just spent the last 2 years touring with George Michael, actually, so I could cross, he wasn't on the list, but, I didn't even think it was possible that an opportunity like that would come up, so.
Yeah, they appear in you. Yeah, you embrace them. You worked with a lot. I think Patty Austin. There were others. A guy I know, Andy Ezrin. You worked with Andy. That's fantastic.
Oh, yeah, Andy's a fantastic.
Yeah. Now, how valuable have you found Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, all of the other internet venues as musician marketing tools?
I certainly appreciate that stuff, and I've gotten a lot of feedback on my stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So it's nice. It's nice when people used to go to my website if they were researching me to hire me for a gig. They go to my discography and click on the little clips and go, oh yeah, sounds good, we want this guy or whatever. And now they can do that, but they can go and pull up a concert on YouTube or performance on YouTube or one of my drum clinics on YouTube, and they can actually see me. So I would have to say it's very valuable. And on Facebook, it's nice when you put pictures up from a performance, or you post an event and people can come to it or not.
Yeah, it's fantastic. And just speaking of the internet, I have to ask you, just because these things are on my mind these days, what are your take on the download blogs or file sharing or any of the free access avenues that bypass the artist. They're policing that a little bit more now, but I know it was a free-for-all maybe a couple of years ago.
You know, I honestly feel that the first of all, I think the labels acted way too slow on that when that was happening. Because I remember when, like, Napster and all that stuff was going way back now.
Yeah.
First came on the, and people's CDs were just ending up on there, and your, you know, files were getting traded back and forth like baseball cards.
Absolutely.
And, you know, a lot of people were like, hey, there's a problem here, and I think a lot of people chose to ignore that problem, and here we are, you know, with, you know, no one's really selling records. Like, no one sold a platinum record last year. You know, singles went platinum.
I know I personally would tell people, some people that I knew, and I was, hey, your thing, it's up there, it's online, it's up for grabs. And some people cared, but others just said, oh, well, I'll make it back when I tour. And, you know, I'm so broke, I always thought, no, make money from the tour and from the CD. You need it all. You know, it's yours.
Yeah, for sure. Like, you don't want, well, what's happening now is, like, you know, people growing up in the next generation thinking that music is free. Not.
Yeah,
you know,
most.
Yeah. Like live, you know, I will sell most of my CDs from the bandstand.
Yes.
You know, it's tough. It's tough. And, yeah, I know they're policing it, and I've heard some people getting up some really hearty fines, like millions of, you know, this person was fined $1 million for downloading CDs.
Downloading CDs, yeah. The digital age, it has some advantages, but then there certainly have been some drawbacks. And
absolutely.
I am glad that it is coming under, somewhat under control recently.
But
speaking on the goods, one of the good things about the internet is I didn't get to go to YouTube a lot. I was just listening to the press page that was sent to me, but I did pull up, I think it was the CD release party. You and it's your for Feel All Right. You and Andy Bate doing the title tune. Man, that was so good.
Yeah, that was the, you know, that was the highlight of the night for me. And the, you know, that was the last tune that we did. So everyone left there with such a good feeling, including myself. You know, just on cloud nine for days and weeks, actually.
I could feel the energy. Do you have an extensive like fall winter itinerary? Will you be performing a lot of dates? Actually, will you be performing in New York anytime soon?
Oh, but we just did a show in New York last week.
Ah, I missed
yeah,
it. Sorry.
With Lockwood Music Hall. So we'll do some other stuff. Like I have, you know, it's funny. I'm doing an instrumental group under my own name on the 22nd of this month. Doing stuff for my older record. Playgrounds.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll do that. It's a place called Why Not on the 22nd of November. So we'll
is that in the village? Why Not?
It is in the village on Christopher Street.
Ah, yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
So we'll do that, but I will be pushing, putting more dates together for the new year. Because December is just kind of crazy. I'm going to do everybody else's stuff.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Let me ask you now, of all the live performances that you've done so far, I know there have been a lot of them, but which of them stand out as particularly memorable or a defining on-stage moment? One or two.
Defining on-stage moments, wow. I would have to say that actually the top moment would be on stage with George Michael at Royal Albert Hall in London.
Mm-hmm.
And introducing the band, and on one particular night he said, next we have the best drummer I've ever worked with, and I just, you know, my heart stopped, you know, it was just
excellent.
I had no idea that was coming.
No.
So, yeah, that was a moment.
Fantastic.
That was a moment. So.
Yeah, that's a big moment. What in your life outside of music inspires you and drives you in a creative sense?
Yeah, I have great friends and an amazing family, so that's always good to, you know, interact with them and see all the fantastic things that they're doing. Yeah. Big
perfect, man. Have you already started planning your next recording project? I know you write a lot of songs, so you probably have many in the kitty. And just one.
Oh yeah, like this, a couple of this make feel all right. Just not that they weren't good, but you know, they're just, you know, we just didn't have room for all of them. So just a couple of those, and then always kind of working on stuff. I got with a little book where I put down my ideas, and I, you know, have like little digital recordings of like singing into a microphone, singing into it with little melodies. So yeah, that's definitely on. In pre-production right
now. Pre-production. Okay. I'd ask, if you were magically allowed to spend an hour with any musician or whomever you choose in history, alive or dead, and really be able to have an in-depth conversation with them, who would that be?
Wow. In-depth conversation. Wow. Okay, let me think here.
Okay.
I've been fortunate enough to speak with Brian Blade for at length. And he's like my favorite. So let me think of somebody else. Think of somebody else. You know what? Hey, Michael Jackson.
Oh, man, yeah.
You know, I never got to see him live. You know, I would love to just talk to him. Like, you know, no camera. I've seen him in front of cameras talking.
Yeah, yeah. No, a real conversation between the two of you. Yeah.
Yeah, because, you know, his music really excites me. Yeah. You know, it's a great voice. You know, it's, you know, very rhythmic.
Yes.
You know, a lot of the stuff, a lot of my influences are based around, like I said, Off the Wall, Thriller. He would be a great person to speak with.
That's fantastic, man. And just ending this, do you have a motto or a mantra that you follow in life? You know, something that gives you direction and helps you stay on purpose.
One of my drum teachers, Jim Blackley, used to say, you know, play every show as if it was your last. So I think that definitely stuck with me. You know, definitely, you know, you should never phone in anything. So
yeah, and it's true too. It could be, you know, tomorrow is not promised to any of us. You know.
Yeah, no, for sure. So that, you know, so I think from there you could sort of say live every day as if it was your last. Be positive. Yeah. You know, Billy Gilson used to say to me all the time, "Let go and let God." So
yes, let go and let God.
Yeah. So yeah. A lot of spiritual stuff, I would say, and you know, a lot of people, another good session musician and spiritual person in New York is a guitar player named Jeffrey Mironoff. Hey, man, the only thing you have to worry about is nothing. So,
I like that. Yeah.
So yeah, well, you know, I think over the period of time, you know, people tell you all sorts of good things, but yeah, I can't say there's a mantra, but maybe there should be.
Well. It sounds like you collect them as they come, you know?
It's, yes, no, for sure, but, yeah. But, you know, I collect them, but then sometimes I have to remember them.
So we all do.
Write them down until I wake up in the morning. I see it. Oh, yeah, remember that thing you said? Yeah, still. You know, cause it's funny, it's easy to have mantras and say all these positive things when you're having good days. You know, it's the bad days where you need to remember them.
Yeah, it's true. I was reading something about Mike Tyson. It said, well, do you have a plan? He said, everybody has a plan until you get punched in the mouth. You know?
Yeah.
So yeah, we all have to remember. Now, what was that I said? But yes, yeah. Yes. I think...
Everyone has a plan until you get punched in the mouth.
Yeah. But... Well, Mark McLean, this has been excellent. It's great talking to you, and again, Feel All Right is a wonderful CD. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
All right. Take care, and I'll be on the lookout for more, and hopefully I'll be able to catch one of your live shows.
Oh, that would be great. Thanks again for having me. It's been a pleasure.
All right. Thank you. Take care.
You're welcome.
Thanks. Bye-bye.